Oh, everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. If you want to eat chalupas, we're the ones to show you how. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. Let's see. Cold, winter, and I'm not a fan of winter. Although, you know, I have friends, Big is one of them, who are not fans of summer. I mean, I don't really understand that. Summer is, it's when you stay out late, when it's warm at night, you can go on romantic strolls, you can go to the beach. Girls wear less. But you know, I still think like a young person. I realize that, even though it's been a while. Been a while! Anyhow, I guess I'm, what's the word? Stalling. As you know, I have a real difficulty sharing my work. Putting my work out there where others can judge it. The Rish Outcast was an attempt to put myself out there a little more. To have a chance to just talk, to present my stories, and I don't know, baby steps, I guess, to being brave enough to say, okay, I wrote this, I think it's good, here you go. And I believe the Rish Outcast has been around for 2 years. I could be wrong. I think it might have been summer of 2014 that I started it, but I don't know. I just remember I went and I visited Big. And he was talking about the summer being way deadlier than the winter as far as car accidents go. And I recorded a Rish Outcast talking about car accidents. I think I might have done subtext that day. That in my the back of my mind, subtext was the first episode that I did. But I don't know. Anyway, here we are 2 years later, and I've got a story today, and I'm afraid to present it. It's just sad, really. I wrote this story in 2015 in the winter. It doesn't really mean anything. It's not super intimate glimpse into my life. It's just a story. And yet in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, you can record this episode, but you don't have to put it out. And that makes me sad. Sad that I have that voice still talking in my ear all these years later, and that I listen to him sometimes. Hey, it's a minor miracle, even if you hate the story, if you hear this episode. So today's story is called Rest Stop. Short little thing, as they were meant to be on the Rish Outcast. So listen, maybe enjoy, maybe not so much. I'll see you on the other side.
Rest Stop by Rish Outfield. The sun was going down in the distance, and I could see lovely pink light. As I drove, I could see the heavy shadows the pine trees made on the road in front of me, the gray snow piled a foot and a half along each side. Colorado was beautiful, even in January. But I'd be happy to be out of it and on my way to Montana, where Geronimo and I would be starting our new life. I patted the dog in question, sitting in the passenger spot of my pickup truck, her black fur tensing when I touched her. Yeah, she was a girl dog, so it should have been Sacagawea or Pocahontas or something. The girl Indian in Peter Pan, maybe. But Geronimo had been her daddy, and had been my good dog. Our good dog, yes. But I had already begun to think of Carolina as a separate entity from me, and X instead of my wife. And it had incensed her that I'd started calling the new dog Geronimo when I'd picked her up from the breeders, when I only did it by accident. New dog had looked so much like our old one, albeit with more black than brown in her coat, that I could be forgiven for making that mistake a time or two. but Carolina wouldn't forgive it. She took it personally, as though I didn't mourn our good, loyal German shepherd and was eager to replace him with a duplicate. Which is, I suppose, what I'd done. I didn't think that contributed to the divorce, since we were barely holding on when Geronimo the First got run over and lasted 2 days in agony before we put him down. But our dog had been like a kid to us, keeping us together when we were drifting apart. And once that kid was gone, the drifting sped up. We just wanted different things, Carolina and me. She was educated and wanted to be an editor in publishing somewhere. And I was happy to bartend at a honky-tonk on the weekends and do woodworking at Cassidy's Fine Town Furnishings during the week. Carolina wanted to live in the city, one heck of a lot bigger than Boise, and I wanted to live in the country, somewhere rural and private like my pretty darn blissful childhood had been. Carolina never wanted to have kids, and hated organized religion with the fiery passion of a red-headed woman, though hers came out of a bottle. Me, I kind of liked going to church. I liked the songs and the kids all dressed up and sitting on a pew, trying so hard to stay still and quiet. And I wanted to call one of those kids my own someday. And maybe I would now. The papers were signed, and we'd be divorced soon enough. And though I only got together with one woman since then, a waitress named Jessica at the Elksman Bar and Grill, whose blonde hair definitely did not come from a bottle, when Carolina got wind of it, she insisted I'd been unfaithful our whole marriage, and poisoned my relations with her family and friends. So, it was time to move on. Out to Sierra, Montana, where my uncle had a ranch. I was going to fix it up, sell woodwork out of the barn, and start my life over again. As soon as I got out of Wyoming. You may wonder, why was I in Wyoming if my destination was Montana? And I didn't know either. I'd made a wrong turn fairly early in my drive, and when I caught it, seeing a sign pointing the way to Fort Bridger and Rock Springs, I just kept driving. It was winter, but it wasn't horribly cold today, and I needed time to think. So I drove south on Highway 30, then east on I-80, and eventually headed north again once I found what looked like a major road. That had been 4 hours ago. And only now that night was on its way did I realize I was a dumbass. But I'd been enjoying the music. Pure Country 101.5, they called themselves, and the sun had been warm on my face and arm, and the truck was comfortable. Now it would be very late indeed when I got to my destination. If I didn't choose to crash at a motel along the way instead, depended on how tired I got. And if the radio station faded. Geronimo made an interrogative sound and sat up.
"Nope, not there yet, girl,"
I said, and scratched her between the ears like she liked. Her old man had liked it too. But the dog was awake now, and turned to look at the woods out the window, a noise almost like a whimper in her throat. I knew that noise. Her daddy would have barked twice, letting me or Carolina know he needed to go outside. This dog whined instead.
"Hey, girl, we'll stop sometime soon,"
I said. Nothing but forest here, and no real place to take a leisurely pee. We passed a sign, but it was a warning about icy roads rather than info about a rest area.
"We'll find a place, girl."
But Geronimo whined again. And then she did bark, 3 times instead of 2. I smiled. "When you gotta go."
"Okay, baby,"
I said, and patted her on the haunches.
"Next place we see."
But none came. The plows had piled up snow too close to the side of the road, so it would be crazy to pull over here. But there was a long stretch up ahead, and I could see a sign that looked like it would help us. I slowed as we approached it, but it was covered over in frozen snow, obscuring all but the word miles, Just beyond the sign, the plows had done a better job, pushing the snow well off the road so you could stop if you had to, just off the highway. I pulled the pickup over, meaning to stay inside, but left her idling and got out with the dog to check on the bed of the truck. All my worldly belongings were strapped there, which didn't amount to much. I'd sold almost everything the last weekend, and I'd always been a bit simple in necessities anyway. They were covered by a thick blue tarp, which hadn't shifted in the drive, though it did have snow on it from when I'd passed out of Idaho. It was getting colder now, since I'd last stopped for gas and a chicken sandwich. Once the sun set, it would really get chilly. And again, I berated myself for driving so far out of my way, and for no good reason. Just then, Geronimo perked up her ears and began to run through the snow toward the woods.
"Not too far, girl,"
I began, then cursed myself again as she leapt a snowbank and kept running as though chasing a ball or a chipmunk.
"Jero, come back here,"
I yelled in the angry master voice that always got my previous dog's tail between his legs. This shout had no effect, and I stood there, alone beside my idling truck, feeling stupid. I clapped my hands roughly.
"Geronimo, get your mangy butt back here."
In response, I heard the dog bark once. She wanted to play? I looked around me, as though someone might see me deliberating, feeling brainless when I had no real reason to. I whistled once, adding the dog's name to it, and got no response. I called my female dog a word for a female dog, and started over the snow as well, mumbling like a street person. The dog's paw prints were easy to follow, and the snow was pretty pristine, so I had no trouble tracking her. Even as she had gone 50 yards, 100 yards, farther away from the road.
"Jero!"
I shouted as I looked behind me and saw my pickup truck neglected and vulnerable way back there now. No cars passed by, but it would only take one.
"I'm going to turn around and leave you,"
I called, but I didn't think I'd dare do that. More likely, I'd sit in the truck stewing until she came back.
"There's probably bears in these woods,"
I said loudly, but she couldn't have heard me. I looked down at my shoes, half sunken in the snow, and I had no choice but to chuckle. I remember Carolina asking me if I could imagine what having a teenager would be like, having him, or her, deliberately do the opposite of whatever I urged him to do, just to be contrary. This was one of those, what'd you call them? Microchasms, a small example of what that would be like. Would have been like. The dog barked again, and I realized she was just ahead, behind a stand of trees. Grumbling, I walked on, passing through the shade of an evergreen the size of a radio tower, and then into the clearing beyond. There was a woman standing there. I started, making a tiny sound that was anything but manly. The woman was middle-aged, slim, and completely still. She wore shapeless brown clothing, old-fashioned or like a religious cult would wear, and my first thought was that I was looking at a wax sculpture or a carving of a person. The eyes seemed to be staring right at me, but I guess she was at just the right angle for it, to appear that way. It was standing several yards away, beside a dead tree, and didn't seem to be alive. My God, I thought, she's a taxidermied person. A stuffed corpse propped up out here like some kind of morbid... The woman blinked. My dog was standing in front of her, looking with what appeared to be confusion. The woman's head tilted ever so slightly in Geronimo's direction. The dog made a little whining noise and sat. That dog never sat for anybody, something Carolina always complained about. In the year that we'd had her, I hadn't gotten her to do much other than come and speak. But now, in front of this strange, still woman, Her eyes moved, bird-like, back to my face.
Hello.
Had she spoken? Was someone else around, saying something? I swallowed, deciding it had been the wind.
What is thy name?
Okay, that was definitely a voice, though it wasn't coming from the woman. It was coming from myself. But thy instead of your?
Jord,
I mumbled, then clarifying.
Jordan.
And a lively Alsatian.
What?
Thou art lively too, to come all this way. My visitors are few.
Though she wasn't speaking, I somehow understood this woman was communicating with me, whispering in my ear as though I had an earpiece in, or she was behind me, leaning just over my shoulder. I got an idea from the woman, a sensation of great age, like a huge, gnarled tree that had been young before any world wars, before slaves were free. But it was all inside the woman, nothing apparent from her face. And those eyes, they did look like the eyes of a stuffed museum specimen, a stuffed person. I needed to get out of there. I started to say, but my voice faltered, failed. This was that flight or fight instinct that came over animals, and my whole being was shouting, run!
Come on, Geron,
I whispered. My voice was not functioning right. My throat didn't work anymore.
No, stay. Thou needest tarry a while.
My dog hadn't left her side. I was going to have to leave the dog. Just go, get back to the truck and drive away. I'd mourn this one like I did her daddy. The dog looked at me, her eyes big and shiny. I couldn't just leave her, could I? She was helpless out here. I looked back at the strange woman, the dead woman. She was closer now to me, 3 or 4 yards closer. But she hadn't taken any steps. Her feet were still planted atop the snow there. Atop. There were no tracks around her, except the dogs.
Stay. Know me,
the voice said. And I looked at that woman's pale corpse face. And she opened her mouth. Her tongue began to loll, and it kept on coming, as though it wasn't attached to her at all. The tongue was rolling around in the air outside her mouth. I had to get out. I had to run. I couldn't move. I couldn't look away from that dead face and live, writhing tongue.
No,
I screamed. Or maybe I only thought it. I felt stinging pain in my fingers. Geronimo barked beside me. I looked down to see nothing. Nothing. It was dark, almost pitch black dark. I was standing there, in the woods, and it was nighttime. I had drifted off. I had the woman, the tongue. Passed out? Passed out, standing. I heard someone say. It was me. My teeth were chattering, my ears and nose ached, and there were stars in the sky above me. Something bit my fingers, and I winced, pulling my hands up together like I was begging or praying. They were like ice. Something large brushed against my leg and barked.
Chero?
I asked in a high, quavering voice. I could see the whites of his eyes and the one light patch on his tail in the dark.
What happened, boy?
The dog barked once. He wanted to play? What were we doing out here? I took a step and found my toes were so cold as to hurt when I put weight on them. The dog barked again, and he brushed me again.
Boy?
Wait. This wasn't Geronimo, my dog, but the other one, the second one. Where was I? The dog kept barking and started moving away, leaving me. I didn't want to be left alone.
Stay here.
My dog would be out of sight in a moment, so I followed her. It was hard walking through the ice and snow and bushes, not seeing much now, just occasional lighter shadow among the black. It hurt to walk. My fingers, toes, ears, and nose felt frozen, smashed in a door. The only part of me that wasn't cold was... I swallowed, putting it out of my mind. I was lost in the woods, and my cell phone was... It was still in the truck, in the hands-free perch. Not that it was likely to get service wherever I was. Where was I? I was going to die out here.
Terry.
But maybe not alone. Jero barked twice up ahead. I couldn't see him, her, anymore, and I moved as fast as I could to catch up. I tripped in the dark, catching myself with my numb, stinging hands. It felt like I had landed on broken glass. I heard a whimpering sound and hoped the dog was all right. But that whimper had come from me. I needed to collect my strength, rest up a tiny bit. I would lay here for just a moment, and then I'd try to get up. Just a minute, at the very most. Geronimo barked again. I heard her moving through the snowy ground toward me. It was too dark there to see anything, even my dog. But then a hot, wet tongue began lapping my forehead, and it was so blessedly warm. I thought of another tongue, a worm-like protuberance squirming from a dead mouth, like an eel leaving a cave. My body tensed up. I couldn't lay there anymore. I had to get up, get moving, or I was dead. Or worse. Geronimo barked twice more.
I know, boy,
I sputtered.
I'm coming.
It was so hard to rise to my knees that I nearly gave up. Just a little rest, to gather some energy. But I saw the white of the snow by my face and the dark spots where my hand had struck, and I recognized it as blood. I couldn't even feel my hands anymore, despite the shuddering pain from only a moment before. Had it been a moment? The moment I wanted to rest there, rest my body, rest my eyes. Rotten flesh, mottled with mold, mottled with crusted filth, my bare skin against it. I gasped. I had to rise, get up on my feet, had to do it now. Jero barked again as I strained, knelt, and pushed myself to a standing position. The dark world lit up with white flashes, and I nearly toppled over again. Suddenly, the dog was at my side, panting, growling, just like she wanted to play frisbee or chase a tennis ball.
Okay, okay,
I whispered, and followed the dog into the dark once again. Ice-covered tree branches scraped at me, and I stumbled over a rock. But then the tree line ended, and down below us, I could see light. Flashing yellow light. And a beeping sound, like a garbage truck backing up. The dog barked and ran toward it. I staggered, then forced myself to run as well. I was at the road once again, where I had left my truck, my phone, everything but my dog. I managed to climb up over the ridge and saw the source of the yellow light. A tow truck was parked behind my pickup and was in the process of lifting it up off the ground. I moved, nearly out of breath, to his driver's window and knocked on it. But my cold fingers would hardly knock, more a slap against the glass. The man, a big bearded old man, started, flailing his hands in the air like I'd doused him with ice water. He got a hold of himself and rolled down his window.
Don't take it,
I said, though my quivering jaw made the words vibrate and string together.
It's my truck.
What?
The old man stammered. Where'd you come from?
I chased my dog into the woods.
I got out.
I got lost.
The truck was just left here. Engine running. Keys in the ignition.
The tow truck driver said, as if explaining his actions.
I know. I'm sorry.
The man pressed a button on his dash.
Please,
I said.
I was...
Jesus, you're shaking. How long you been out there?
I don't know. It was light, and then...
Terry.
I got the call half an hour, 45 minutes back, mister. It's...
He shuddered, then flipped a switch, and my truck began to lower again. I went up to the pickup, opened my passenger door, got the blanket from on the seat back, and wrapped myself with it. It was blessedly warm. I slapped the seat with my palm, wincing at the pain.
Up, Gerald!
My dog leapt up into the truck, and I closed the door on her. The tow truck driver got out of his vehicle and spent a minute unhooking my pickup from his truck. I walked over to him.
Got a call about an abandoned car,
he told me again,
and I figured I knew where they were talking about. Found your truck here, still warm inside, still running fine.
He looked at me and swallowed. The old man had on the world's dirtiest Broncos cap, but I had seen worse. I kept fighting the impulse to look behind me, into the forest, afraid I'd see someone creeping closer over the gray snow.
Terry.
But it was just trees and snow, bathed in orange light from the yellow flashers on his roof and the red brick lights. Still, I wanted to get out of there. I was sure the old timer would still charge me, even though he'd towed me nowhere. But I didn't care what it cost. I wanted to be gone, down the road, headed for my new start in Montana, though I knew I'd be checking my rearview mirror like a teenager in a stolen car.
You're lucky, you know that,
he said, when he'd racked the chain back onto his winch. My hands were still aching from the cold, and I kept seeing glimpses of horror in the woods, a woman who had been living there for decades, even if she'd died centuries ago.
Know me.
I don't feel lucky,
I muttered. The old man grunted, and I don't know if that meant he'd heard me or not. I glanced back at the trees, and for just a moment, I thought I saw her there, arms outstretched, already peeling off her moth-worn shift. But it was nothing. Maybe a bird.
Why would you stop here, of all places?
The tow truck man wondered.
The dog wanted to stop. I didn't know where else I'd get a chance.
Didn't you read the sign?
Sign?
The old man grabbed my arm with gloved fingers. I stiffened at his touch. He marched me just a few yards past his tow truck to the sign right alongside the road.
Oh,
he said when he saw the snow covering it.
God damn it.
Look, I don't...
I began, meaning to tell him I didn't want to be rude, but I had a long drive ahead of me and really wanted to be on my way. What's more... I needed to be on my way, which is almost the same thing, but not quite. But he reached up above his head. How did that much snow pile up on a thin metal sign anyway? And gave the tin a hard slap with his gloved hand. The loud bell toll sound did send a bird flying from one of the pines nearby. I had to admit that I was startled as well, but hopefully I can be forgiven. Some of the snow turned out to be ice, but most of it fell onto the ground. The old man took a step back, shining the light he had on his keychain up at the sign. I stepped around and looked up at it. Absolutely no stopping. Rest area 1.5 miles.
You see it now?
He asked, though I was standing right beside it.
Yeah, I said anyway. The end.
So that was Rest Stop. I don't have a great deal to say about this story. Like I said before, it's not a story that's personal to me. I've not been divorced. I don't own a pickup truck. I don't own a dog. Yeah, there's nothing in this story really that's from my life, from my past. Sometimes it's a fun exercise to say I'm going to write somebody who's not me. I wrote a story called Jogging to Stand Still, holy cow, more than a decade ago. And in it, I tried to come up with somebody who was athletic, who had been popular in high school, who hated Star Wars and the Rocky Horror Picture Show, was just a bit of a thug as the main character. And I don't know that it was the first time that I did that, but I remember going out of my way. I don't know why I'm bringing that. Oh, the main character in this, Jordan, I think is his name, although I don't know that that gets used much. Not me. None of it has a lot to do with me. The story originally took place in Colorado. My friend Jeff, his wife is from Idaho. And Jordan was going to be driving from Idaho to Montana, and he drove badly and he got stuck in Colorado, which is where the story takes place. And I emailed my friend Jeff and I said, what road do you take to get to Colorado from Idaho? And he said, no road. Why would you go to, what are you talking about? And I didn't know what he was saying. I thought he was just being an a-hole. Jeff is really, really, really smart. And I'm smart, but not really, or really, really. Maybe I'm not even smart. I just thought he was saying, why would you go to Colorado? As though it was a stupid question. But anyway, I was doing the recording of the story, and I realized I didn't know what roads Jordan would have to take, because Jeff never answered that question. And so I looked on a map and I suddenly understood what Jeff was talking about. Idaho doesn't touch Colorado at all. There's Utah and Colorado right next to each other, and right above them are Idaho and Wyoming. I guess I had forgotten that Wyoming existed. And I thought that it went Colorado and then Montana. And so I had to change that. And the story now takes place in Wyoming. But, you know, that doesn't change anything else. I used to get lost all the time when I lived in California. When I moved to LA, I would get lost, oh geez, 2 or 3 times a week. And there would be times when I would be so frustrated and so angry that I wanted it to die, because there are no landmarks. You can't just look and it's like, oh, there's a mountain, or oh, there's a valley, or oh, there's the ocean. You can't see anything. Sure, there's a freeway, but which freeway is it? Oh, there's some buildings, but what buildings are they? Oh, hey, there's a bunch of gangbangers. Well, maybe I should ask them directions. I used to get lost, and it would make me crazy. I'd be so angry at myself and at the freeway system, because the freeways are set up in a weird way. You know, sometimes there's not a corresponding exit going east as there is going west. Or, you know, you get off on an exit and you need to go north, but the street will only let you go south. And you can't just do a U-turn right there in the road, because there is a center divider preventing you from doing a U-turn. And a lot of times there are one-way streets. And, oh, LA is just so big, and there's so many freeways. It's a very easy place to get lost. And a couple of years ago, I was looking for my uncle's house. My uncle lived out in I want to say it starts with a T, but it's not Tustin, and it's not Temecula, but it's something like that. Just out in the middle of BFE, frankly, out by Palm Springs or something. And I was going to Comic-Con in San Diego. I asked him directions to get to San Diego, and he told me. And so I followed them, and then on the way back, I either took a wrong turn and just kept going, as the Bruce Springsteen song goes, or I just, you know, I saw the exit and got off on it thinking that it would take me where I wanted to go, because I knew that it was the right road that I had been on, you know, the right highway or something like that. And I took it, and it just, I started, none of it looked familiar, and I started to feel like I was going more and more inland, as they say, which is east. And I think it took me an extra 40 minutes or so to find where he lived, that place that started with a T. And I found myself in like all this wine country, you know, vineyard places. Do you know what I'm saying? Where there's all these grape, not fields, but, and not orchards. Do you call them orchards? Anyway, I didn't know where I was. And I'm just, it's so hard to pull over and look for directions, try and find directions, try and find a map and all that stuff. Everybody has a phone that tells them how to get someplace. And I guess I didn't at the time. I just had one of those simple phones that makes calls and does text messages. But I thought about, you know, stopping for directions in one of these little tiny towns, and that it being some crazy place where normal rules don't apply. I thought, you know, I said, okay, so you're driving through and you see a sign that says, now entering Murder Town, California. And so I thought I would write a story called Murder Town, where you go into the city limits and murder is legal there. And last year I wrote a story called Chalupadale, Next Exit, which was inspired by the same thing. You know, when I'm driving, I think, I let my imagination go, and probably because I got lost. Although in that story, it was a guy, he saw a sign, he decided to get off to check out Chalupadale. And it was, I mean, that was just a joke. An excuse to use the word chalupa 100 times in a story, an excuse to sing the chalupa song, which, you know, I'm not thrilled with Rest Stop, as you know, but I was thrilled to present Chalupadale, Next Exit. Not because it's good, but because it was so fun. That brings me to Rest Stop, though. Rest Stop is the same kind of story, except for it's not a town. It was a little story, a short story. And it's hard to create character, to create tension, to set a good pace. It's hard to be scary in a short story because, in my opinion, a lot of the fear that the reader or viewer feels is because they care about the characters, you know? So many times, horror movies are just something passes in front of the camera and you hear this awful blare of music and you're startled and the audience goes, but that's just irritation. That's startling the audience. An air horn in the movie theater could do that with nothing else. No artistry, no talent, no pace, no story behind it. And trying to come up with a scenario where something is scary in very few words is hard. And I don't know that I succeeded in Rest Stop, but it was a story that I tried. It was something that I wrote, and now you've heard it. Sometimes I wish I had a lot more fans so that they could ask me, what is this story about? And I could either answer it or I could say, I don't know. Like we did that Christmas story, Present of the Christmas Ghost, and Big said, so it was demons then. It was some kind of demon that was speaking through the Ouija board. And that surprised me. I hadn't even considered that there were demons. It wasn't a story about that. But it was an interesting point, and it made me wonder, well, what is the correct answer? And the correct answer is, I don't know. Correct answer was, it was always supposed to be a total cop-out rip-off ending. Maybe not a rip-off, but it ripped off the audience. It didn't rip off something that somebody else wrote, unless it's me, right? Ripping off subtext, which I mentioned earlier. Ooh, wow. Circle of life, kids. We all live in a yellow submarine. Anyhow, rest stop. I wrote another story that's a little bit related to rest stop that I've never shared with anybody. And I wonder why. I did cover art for it, but I don't think that I ever typed it up. Maybe I did. Okay, here I am just a few minutes later. Okay, it's hours later. It's not that long later, but boy, is it cold. Holy monkey. I may have complained about it before. I was foolish to complain about it. Now it is cold. It is cold. Anyway, I think what I was saying before was that, you know, it would be really neat if I had fans who wanted to talk about the stuff that I wrote. Although, you know, I have a fan. And, hello. Thanks for listening. But today at work, I was talking to, let's say his name is Austin, since, you know, his name is Austin. Austin got hired, I don't know when it would have been, less than a year ago. But around the time that I started writing Into the Furnace, which was the novel that I wrote that nobody has ever read. And he's like, what are you doing? Because Into the Furnace was written in a notebook. After that, after writing that, I decided, you know, it's better to write things on a laptop. Big and I talked about getting a laptop, and I thought that, you know, maybe I would write more if I had one. And it certainly helped, because once I got that laptop, then I was able to keep track of numbers of how many words I was doing. I mean, we talked about this. I did an episode where I talked about what I called my dry run for writing a novel. And that dry run ended up being writing a novel. But Austin would see me writing it, and he'd be like, what are you doing? And I told him, you know, I'm a writer. I'm trying to write a novel. And he showed a lot of interest. He's a good guy, this guy. Anyway, I told him the premise of the novel, and just today or yesterday, he came up to me and he said, hey, whatever happened to that book you were writing? Did you ever finish that? And I said, yeah, I did. And he said, what did you do with it? Did it get published? Did you send it out there? And I said, no, just still sits. I've done nothing with it. And he says, oh, you know, you can self-publish things now if you want to. Like, did you know that you can put things out on Amazon and people can buy them? You know, you can just publish it yourself. And I was like, really? You don't say. I guess I have to try that. Okay, I didn't say that. I said, oh, yeah, I've done that before, just not with a book. And he says, wow, really? Is your stuff out there that I could read? And I said, well, there's some stuff there. I mean, short stories, not the book. This was the first book that I wrote. And he's like, wow, that's interesting. Yeah, well, how come you didn't ever put that out there? And I didn't want to tell him the whole sob story that you've heard, wow, 90 times already. So I just said, well, I will. I don't know. Episode after episode, I guess I come on here, and yeah, I say the same thing over and over again. And Big and I were talking today about the Doonstief and how our lives have changed since we started the Doonstief and how things have stayed the same. And people are supposed to change completely every 7 years. I mean, it's probably a myth, but they say that, you know, all of your cells, all of the parts of your body replicate themselves. By 7 years from now, there won't be anything that's the same inside you, right? It's all a new you, which, you know, sounds kind of ludicrous when I say it now, because it's just like, well, okay, well, why wouldn't my teeth are the same, right? No, yeah, no, yes. Anyhow, talking about like what has changed 7 years ago, and it's disappointing that I haven't changed enough when it comes to, look, I want to be a writer. Writing is important to me. I wouldn't mind selling some of the things that I write. You know, I'd like to get better at writing, so I will continue to do it more and more. And yet I, you know, I spent all this time writing a novel and I never shared it with anybody. So that was a mistake. That's a mistake that can be rectified, though. And I guess the point I was trying to make before was, you know, I wish that more people liked my stuff so that I could have people ask me, what did so-and-so mean? And what did rest stop mean? And basically, it means nothing. It was my attempt at a scary story. Because I'm an adult male, ostensibly, you know, I don't often feel threatened or in danger. You know, I've written some stories. There was the Batman one. There was the one in the casino where it's a person in danger, a person's threatened, a person is scared. But these are adult men. And, you know, it's so much easier to write a child in danger or a young woman in danger or, you know, an old person, I guess, in danger. Although we don't really focus on old people very much, do we, in our entertainment. I want to be a better writer. And one of the things that I used to write about when I was a teenager was, you know, things that scared me. Things that saying, wouldn't it be messed up if? My buddy Dennis and I would always come up with these wouldn't it be messed up if scenarios. And that's what rest stop is. You know, the dog runs out into the snow and the guy follows the dog and there's a woman standing there. She's just standing out in the woods. That is a visual image that I see in my head and it's scary. I like that image. She's essentially, you know, the witch, the old woman at the foot of the bed that I've written about a bunch of times. It's just really scary to me, the idea of an old woman, a scary old woman. Although I don't remember if the woman in Rest Stop is old. I don't know. See, doing it in an audio format means that I should be able to do something with her voice. So it's clear that it is in his mind, that it's projecting, that there's something not right about it. And that will be an interesting experiment to see, you know, if that helps the story. The way that the narrator presents a story can either help or hinder a story. Now, it doesn't save a bad story. But it can make a good story better. It can make a mediocre story seem a little stronger, I would think. I feel like I'm a good narrator, so hopefully I at least do justice to everything that I record, if not elevate it. And, you know, that's important. I feel like that I'm confident in. That I do a good job in. If you had a book that you wrote and you wanted to pay somebody to narrate it, I feel like I could recommend Rish Outfield for that. Sorry, I'm trying to speed up enough that I can get in front of this guy who is in the next lane, but will not, for the love of God, let me in. Just let me in. I need to turn, good fucking Christ. Sorry, I had to go 60 miles an hour to get in front of this guy. Anyway, I feel like...
Feel like what?
Like I've talked a lot, even though... What have I said? I've said that it's cold. I said that I'm afraid to share my stories. And I've said that, you know, I'm not sure that this is a really good story, but it was my attempt at writing something scary. And, you know, there it is. Another story out there being shared. And, you know, even if it isn't a good story, it's out there now. It's in your hands. You can pass judgment on it if you'd like. And that is another small achievement. Every single time I put a story out there to be rejected, that's a chance that it will be accepted. I could say that with myself. Every time you ask Charlotte Latrance out to the movies, there's a chance that she will accept you. Now, of course, there's the chance that she will reject you. That's what she usually does. But if you keep on asking Charlotte, one of these days, she might say yes. So go! Okay, well, I'm sorry. I don't know why I was doing that voice. I don't know who anybody named Charlotte Latrance. My apologies. We've reached the end of this episode, but somehow it has become really, really foggy during this drive. Not London foggy, not Hound of the Baskervilles foggy, but foggy enough that there's atmosphere, that there's ambiance, there's water all over, or moisture all over the cement. So every one of these street lights that I'm passing, you can see the reflection on the ground. It's beautiful. And it's the kind of thing, the kind of environment that's perfect for a scary story, for a ghost story, for a Jack the Ripper story, you know, for something. We don't get a lot of fog here where I live. And so this is really special to me. I love it. And it's made me feel less cold. It makes me think I should write another scary story. I could write a story about the fog, rolling in and seeing somebody out there, maybe somebody watching you through your window, but because of the fog, you can't make it out. Is it somebody you know? Is it a man? A woman? Is there even anybody actually there? Now that I look, I can't tell if there's somebody there or not. Maybe it's a garbage can. No, they moved. They are looking up at me. You know, that sort of thing. That's scary. I mean, if I were a young, pretty woman, now, sorry that she has to be pretty. Them's the rules, guys. I don't make them. Then I would feel more afraid. But, you know, we've all been vulnerable. We've all been weak or sick or tired or naked when something bad could easily happen to you. Anyhow, thank you for listening to the Rish Outcast. It is a labor o' love because nobody listens to it and I don't make a dime from it. I know I've said this before, but I'd probably say it again as long as there are episodes of this show. If the show means something to you, let me know. Do it. Let me know. The life you save may be your own. Okay, wait. That saying doesn't really apply here. I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong? All right, kids. Take care. Drive safe.
The Rish Outcast really should not exist. But since it does, I suppose the best that can be said of it is that it was produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. Of course, that's a little bit like noticing the piranhas eating you of a very attractive coloring.
It makes me think, well, maybe I could write a story about the fog. Although I've done that. Not very good stories. I'm going to cut all that. It makes me feel like I should write another scary... Ow. It makes me feel like I should write another scary story. The Rish Outcast was an attempt... Oh, Jesus.